Ms. Kiernan, are you ready?
Yes, I am, Judge.
All right. You may proceed whenever you please.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This is Elizabeth Kiernan, and I represent the Commonwealth on this appeal. The totality of the circumstances facing Investigator Shockley in this case gave him probable cause to believe that contraband, in this case drugs, would be found inside the container on the defendant's seat. Therefore, under the automobile exception to the Fourth Amendment, Shockley was justified in opening and searching that container without a warrant. Probable cause, as the Court is aware, is a flexible standard, and in this case, we have three main contributors that gave Officer Shockley probable cause to believe there was contraband inside that small container. The first being Officer Shockley's training experience. He testified that this type of container was the type that is often used to carry drugs. In particular, the Commonwealth asked him about methamphetamine and cocaine. He said that he had not seen this exact container before, but this was the type of container commonly used to carry pills and powders. Furthermore, this container didn't have a label on it, and this Court has previously found that significant in Maven versus Commonwealth, suggesting that the container did not have a current medical use. Furthermore, Officer Shockley observed the defendant's evasive actions as he approached the vehicle, trying to hide this container from the police's view. He saw the defendant take the container. Well, actually, I guess he didn't see it with the container straight off, but he saw the defendant have something in a closed fist and placing that under his leg in what Officer Shockley described as an obvious attempt to hide it from the other police officer's view. He also observed the defendant throw this object back into the car when he was taken out of the vehicle. These kind of furtive actions have been held to be indicia of criminal activity in other cases in this Court, and certainly Investigator Shockley was permitted to use his common sense in making a determination as to why it was that the defendant was hiding this object from view. And lastly, we also have in this case a tip that Shockley had received from his supervisor, which originated from Angie Dudley, who was present at the defendant's residence. The record does not reveal whether Officer Shockley knew the full extent of that information, but it is clear that his supervisor, the Franklin County Sheriff's Office narcotics supervisor, told him that a tip had been received that the defendant was on his way to manufacture methamphetamine.
Counsel? Yeah. In the light most favorable to the defendant, as we are required to view this evidence on a Commonwealth's appeal, what is the effect of Lyle's knowledge in terms of knowing who the tipster was and that she was at the house? What effect does that have at this stage?
Very little, to be frank, Your Honor, because the record does not conclusively established that Officer Shockley had that information. So in the light most favorable to the defendant, I don't believe that we can consider that information here. What we do know, however, is that the defendant, or rather the Officer Shockley, did have this information relayed to him by another police officer, even if the origins of that source are unknown, if it is in fact true that he did not know where that information was coming from. And that kind of anonymous tip has also been found to properly contribute to a probable cause determination. In particular, in Hollis, this Court recognized that a tip that came from, that originated from an unknown source, even if it was conveyed through a reliable source, could be used to establish probable cause. Similarly here, we have a tip of unknown origin, as far as Shockley is concerned, being relayed through the reliable source of his supervising officer. And while standing alone, that might not be enough to provide probable cause. In this case, we have the combination of the suspicious container being the type that often carries pills or carries contraband or powders. We have his furtive actions, and we have that tip. So the strength of that tip and its unknown origins is not positive in this case, because it has to be considered within the full context, the totality of circumstances that were confronting Investigator Shockley when he decided to open that bottle. The court has also held.
Counsel, is there any significance to the fact that on the video it appears that Shockley frisked the defendant before he opened the container?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe so. The video revealed that it appears that Shockley did conduct a brief pat-down search of the defendant. You can see him moving over the exterior of his legs before opening that container. And that brief pat-down for weapons, I don't believe, has any impact on... he certainly would not have uncovered contraband in that type of search. It wasn't an elaborate search of his pockets. He was presumably simply following protocol and looking out for his fellow officer. It doesn't change what he did see, which is the furtive movement, the tip that he had, as well as what that container actually was. The defendant tries to argue that the pat-down, as well as his initial concern that there were concern for officer safety, means that the officers could only look for weapons in this case. And that argument doesn't really apply to the facts as they develop in this case. First of all, we're not talking about the subjective officers, the subjective intent of the officers as they approach the vehicle. If he says he's looking for weapons in a probable cause determination, we do not need to necessarily accept the officer's subjective motivation. However, in this case, the police officers did also say, or rather, Investigator Shockley also said, once he saw what it was, the defendant was concealing the small bottle, he said he knew that there was contraband in there. He may have been wrong, but that's what he believed was in that container once he saw what it actually was. I think that's a long, long way around, Joanna, but did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Anything further, Ms. Kiernan?
Yes, briefly, Your Honor, I would also like to point out that this court, if the court is not satisfied with the reliability of the tip in this case, this court has also upheld a finding of probable cause in Maven versus Commonwealth based solely on furtive behavior by the defendant and a container being the type that is likely to conceal drugs. In that case, the defendant was in the backseat of a vehicle, slumped down, tried to place a container under the seat in front of him to hide it from police view. The container similarly had no markings on it indicating current medical use. The police officer was justified in that case based on his training and experience that the bottle probably contained contraband and the defendant's furtive actions. He was justified in searching and seizing that bottle in that case. Does the court have, it's difficult to tell on the phone. I'm just looking at people's faces and seeing if they have questions. Can I answer any questions for the court?
Judge Chafin, any?
No, I don't have any. I think she's answered everything
right.
In her argument.
Judge Decker?
I'm fine. Thank you, Judge.
All right. And I have no further questions. If that concludes your opening remarks, you have about 8 minutes left if you need it for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Hunt, may we hear from you? And I'm particularly interested in why doesn't the automobile exception apply?
Well, Your Honor, first off, my name is George Hunt. I represent the appellee, and if it may please the court, I don't think I'm not arguing that the automobile exception wouldn't apply, but the automobile exception still requires a finding of probable cause, and our argument basically would be around that. That the facts that listed by the Commonwealth do not establish probable cause to search small containers within the automobile itself.
Your position then is that the furtive movements and the tip that had been supplied, the type of bottle that was found, were all insufficient to establish probable cause?
Well, yes, sir, and I can. Yes, Your Honor. I believe that beginning with the tip that was supplied, I don't think that it, I think it's insufficient because it's not reliable. In that, Mr. Investigator Shockley doesn't have any information other than there's a tip that the defendant may be on his way to cook methamphetamine in an area called Truvine. There's no independent observation to conclude the reliability of that tip. As well as there's no identifying Mr. Investigator Shockley doesn't have anything identifying that he is, that the tip is reliable in itself. Furthermore, there's nothing in the tip that actually establishes that Mr. Phillips, the defendant, may actually possess some sort of illegal narcotic at the time while he's on his way to cook methamphetamine. So in that sense, I would say that the tip should not be considered, as well as, I think, in along with what was observed by Investigator Shockley, he observed a fist, a hand, his right hand, made up as a fist, tucked underneath the right thigh of the defendant. He doesn't actually see a container until later. He doesn't see that he's actually trying to hide anything at that point. He just sees his hand under his leg, which could be anything. And I think that's what the cases, the Maven case and the Lawson case, the investigators in those cases actually see the object that they're trying to hide before they're asked to step out of the vehicle. So at that point, he asks Sergeant Pruitt to have him exit the vehicle. And as he's exiting the vehicle, Sergeant Pruitt testifies that he has both of the defendant's hands as he's exiting the vehicle. Well, but there's no testimony that he actually witnessed anything being thrown back into the vehicle. Only Investigator Shockley says he witnesses that. Sergeant Pruitt, who's actually right at the door, testifies he doesn't mention anything about something being tossed back into the vehicle. And you think something so obvious in front of Sergeant Pruitt would have been brought up in court or testified to. I think it's also important that this whole time period up until this point, they're concerned for officer safety, and that's their basis for having him removed from the vehicle. The vehicle is then, or they eventually then find the small canister itself, and I think the canister itself, it is not a pill bottle. So there's no label on it. There's no label on it stating medical purpose because it's not a pill bottle itself. It's just a small plastic or paper canister. It's not something that would have a label on it.
Wasn't there testimony from one of the officers, though, that said that in his professional experience this was the type of container in which illicit narcotics were frequently secreted?
Well, he said that in his experience that small canisters can hold drugs, but he doesn't, or can hold narcotics, but he also testifies in the transcript that he has no experience with this type of canister itself, that this canister is very unique and he's never seen it. So I think those two statements work against each other. On one hand, he's saying I have experience, and on the other hand, well, he really has no experience with what he finds.
Counsel, you seem to be arguing a lot about the facts, but isn't it true that the trial judge accepted the testimony of the officers and specifically said that when he was considering the motion?
Specifically said that he doesn't find the officers incredible?
Well, that he believed that he was not concerned about what the officers' testimony per se. He essentially accepted the officers' testimony.
Well, that is true. That's true. He does accept the officer's testimony, but the trial court was also there to observe and witness the testimony and credibility of the officers, and the trial court determined, based off what the officers testified to, that the facts did not establish probable cause in order to search the small canister, that the officers more had a concern that was more with that a weapon could have been in the vehicle, and that they had the reasonable suspicion to search for weapons, but not then continue to search for illegal narcotics. Does that answer the question?
Well, I just think the comment of the judge was specifically relating to Pruitt and Shockley. I don't think either one of them is lying. So he believed the officers. So the question becomes application of law to the facts. And I think that the judge also made a comment about, well, they could have gotten a warrant. And I think that's what prompted Judge Huff's initial question about, you know, with the automobile exception, you don't need a warrant.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm not sure that the judge, I think the judge was more, I can't speak for the judge, but I think that there's more of a concern that the judge did mention that they could have gotten a warrant, but I don't know whether he was specifically saying that there's enough here for probable cause in order for a magistrate to issue a warrant rather than the facts should have been taken in front of a magistrate on an affidavit and then the magistrate determine whether or not a warrant should be issued.
Have you anything further, Mr. Hunt?
No, sir, I do not.
Any questions from any members of the court?
No.
No, thank you.
Ms. Kiernan, have you any rebuttal?
Just briefly, Your Honor, to clarify a few of the factual issues, I know we're at a little bit of a disadvantage here because we're looking at pictures of that container, Appendix 71 through 73. However, the trial judge, who had an opportunity to actually see the container Shockley brought in, it wasn't introduced into evidence, did describe it as a pill bottle in his opinion, and that's on Appendix page 65. So that description, I guess, being the best way to describe that bottle, being a pill bottle and being a small container like that, which Shockley testified was often used to have pills and powders in it, that type of container in his training experience, if it was used for medical purposes, it probably should have had a label on it. Officer Shockley also did see the defendant throw that container back into his seat when he left. At Appendix page 29 through 30, he describes to the trial court what he saw, and that does include throwing that bottle back into the seat after Officer Pruitt has taken the defendant out of the car. I would conclude, Your Honor, just by emphasizing that the court is looking at the totality of the circumstances here and the totality of the circumstances facing Officer Shockley, or Investigator Shockley, rather, which did include that tip that the defendant was on his way to manufacture drugs, his training experience regarding this type of container, and also the defendant's furtive movements are enough to establish probable cause in this case, and we would ask the court reverse and remand to continue trial this matter.
Very well. Thank you very much. The case is submitted. We appreciate the argument of counsel, and we'll stand adjourned, and the court will reconnect in the conference. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.